Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last week, Ohio Secretary of State John Husted directed elections boards in Ohio's 88 counties to establish uniform hours for early in-person voting, open till 7 p.m. the 2 weeks before the election. But unlike in 2008, no weekend hours. We're going to get at that issue in a few minutes. Joining us right now is Secretary of State John Husted. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann.
The idea was to equalize voting times among counties. Critics have said that the counties are not equal to begin with, that voting habits vary depending on the political and cultural makeup of a county. Urban-dominated and largely Democratic-leaning counties tend to favor in-person weekend early voting, and rural-dominated and largely Republican-leaning counties tend to favor weekday or mail-in early voting. What's wrong with having early voting on the weekends?
Well, the situation is this. Since 1803, we've only had one presidential election where there has ever been weekend voting. And that was in 2008, and only six counties in the state had weekend voting. 82 counties did not have weekend voting. So if you want to talk, and the counties that had it were largely urban counties.
Right.
So if you want to know why the turnout's better in urban counties, well, they're the only ones that actually had weekend voting. So it's pretty clear as to why that occurred. And here's the issue that I faced as Secretary of State. Do you want local control of elections, or do you want to have a uniform standard across all 88 counties? My preference when I took office was that we move toward uniformity. One of the first actions that I took to this extent was that in a handful of counties, for example, Franklin County, Cuyahoga County, they sent out unsolicited absentee ballot requests. So every voter in those counties got an absentee ballot request in the last presidential election. But in 82 other counties, they didn't get those things. And so what I said is that we should either do it in all counties or we should do it in none of the counties. And ultimately, I decided in favor of doing it in all of the counties. So for the first time ever, you will receive an absentee ballot request mailed to your home. We're mailing them out on August 31st. Should land at your home the day after Labor Day. And every single voter can fill one of those out, send it in, and they will have more than 750 hours to vote without ever leaving their home. We're one of only a couple states in the nation that have that kind of access to a voter via mail. And that, I believe, is going to be a positive step at both creating fairness and also easing the potential for long lines at the polls because more and more people are going to vote by mail. So that's the first step on uniformity. But I started to talk with boards of elections during the course of the year and said, okay, I will leave the issue up to you in establishing your hours and days of operations. But prior to doing that, I approached the General Assembly and said, please take this out of my hands, whether it be my predecessor, Jennifer Bruner, or myself, controversy arises when a Secretary of State has to come in and set hours because you're never going to make people happy across the board no matter what decision you make. My predecessor couldn't, and I certainly would not be able to. I said, so General Assembly, take this out of my hands. Set uniform days, set uniform hours in the state. They did not do that. The only thing they did do was they took the Monday, Sunday, and Saturday before the election, at the request of the elections officials, the Elections Officials Association in the state, mm-hmm. took those out of the early voting bag of options, for example, mm-hmm. because the board said, we need time to synchronize our rolls, because you have all this early voting. We're going to have millions of ballot requests in the first 35 days, people voting in person, and they need to make sure when those books go out to the polls on Tuesday morning that they're accurate, that we know who's requested a ballot, who has one, and who's already voted.
And this was a problem in 2008 in those six counties where it was allowed?
It was a problem for the boards of elections officials to get this organized and to make sure it was done correctly, as described to me by the boards of elections officials themselves. And in many cases, particularly if you're going to start creating uniformity, you have a lot of rural counties that have very small staff. Sometimes they only have a couple of people working in the office. And to manage all of those issues, they don't have the resources to do it. This is the challenge with uniformity, is that while you may have a very well-funded, large staff in Franklin County, mm-hmm. you go to Southeast Ohio, which you were just talking about on your coal conversation,
right?
And the resources are not available and the technology is not available at the same level to handle the issues in the same way.
My guest is Ohio Secretary of State John Husted. That gets back to the original point that I made, that the idea was to equalize voting times among counties, but counties are not created equal. The counties are different.
Well, but Ann, I acknowledge that. It is a difficult issue to handle. But remember, the only reason that we ended up here was because of the complaints that started early last week when some counties were voting to have extended hours and some counties weren't. And we ended up with a situation, and I said I would, if they couldn't figure it out, I was going to act in a uniform and consistent manner. If they couldn't figure out amongst themselves that I was going to rule in favor of standard hours of operation.
Instead of on a piecemeal basis breaking
Instead
ties.
Instead of on a piecemeal basis breaking ties, creating a non-uniform atmosphere where some counties would vote by one set of rules and another. I was not going to do that. But what ended up happening is that in some cases, even Democrats were offering motions at the local boards of elections to extend hours in Republican counties to create, in many cases, a controversy over unequal access.
After your directive had been issued.
No. This was previous to my directive
being
issued.
Okay, sorry. Yep.
So there was, then we had the complaints that Republican counties had longer voting hours than Democratic counties. Okay? Clearly, that was creating a bad impression on Ohio's election system and creating a valid argument of unequal access to the polls. So first, I reviewed my legal options. Do I have the authority to set uniform standards? The Attorney General said I did. I then visited with boards of elections officers to try to establish a fair system. And what we came down on was that for the first 3 weeks, the boards will be open from 8 to 5. On the last 2 weeks, they will be open till 8 to 7 so people can get there after work. And it created 230 hours of voting, which for most counties is an expansion in opportunity to vote in person over what it was in 2008.
But for key Democratic counties, it's a contraction compared to 2008.
See, I would argue differently because you actually can vote from home on the weekends. You just vote from home.
But the question
everybody's going to get an mm-hmm. absentee ballot request, and they don't even need to leave home to cast their ballot. And I understand people can disagree with my decision, but I believe the decision is fair because it establishes uniform hours across the state.
There's the issue of the culture of voting. Some people like to vote in person. They like to vote in groups. They could vote on weekends because they're working during the week. Do you disagree?
We've only had weekend voting throughout the whole weekend mm-hmm. in six counties in one presidential election. Once. For the other, since 1803, it hasn't happened that way. And I understand people who want to have different hours. I talk to some folks that say we should have Saturdays. I talk to some folks that say we should have Sundays. I was in a position where I had to establish something that was equal across the state. And I believe that 750 hours to vote from home, 230 hours to vote in person early and then all day election day is ample time for people to cast a ballot in the state.
The issue of
not restricting an opportunity for everybody, and and this is the thing about being Secretary of State or in a swing state. You hear the controversy discussion in Ohio, but in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, they don't even have early voting there. We do a very good job of creating ease of access, balancing also the other challenges that I get on security. What are you doing to make sure that the voter rolls are secure? What are you doing to make sure fraud doesn't happen?
But fraud has not been raised as an issue.
Well, it has been raised as an issue, and it gets raised all the time. I think the battle cry of both Democrats and Republicans is wrong on this front. There is very rarely an occasion of voter fraud, and there are even rare instances of voter suppression. These are battle cries from both sides that are not constructive to confidence and building confidence in our system of elections.
Regarding the issue of cost, that was raised as an issue for limiting or eliminating the weekend voting hours across the board, the weekend voting hours before the election day, the weekend before election day. The cost, I mean, by going Wednesday
it's
through Sunday.
It's what local boards raised to me, although it was not a predominant factor in my decision.
Let's get to the issue of the two Montgomery County elections officials now suspended. They voted, the whole Board of Elections in Montgomery County voted on the issue of whether or not to expand that your directive to include early in-person voting hours on weekends, right?
Yeah, the directive set forth a uniform standard
right.
across the state, which was 8-5 for the first 3 weeks, essentially, and 8-7 the last 2 weeks.
And the whole board voted on that.
Whole board voted on that.
And you only suspend, and the whole board voted on whether to expand it to.
No. The whole board voted on whether or not to implement the directive.
The directive. And
two members voted in favor of it, and two members refused to vote for it, which was essentially leaving in place the rules that they had previously passed,
right.
which would have had voting not only in violation of my directive, but also in violation of state law.
But why allow them to vote in the first place then? If they don't vote.
That's the decision of the local board.
Right. So they voted, and they voted their heart and their mind, let's suggest. Why not just let that vote go forward and just pursue your directive as is? What they voted on isn't valid anyways, right?
They essentially vote to violate state law. And you know what? They have the right to disagree with me. They can voice protest at the Board of Elections meeting. They can come on your show and say how unfair and how poorly they've been treated. But they don't have the right to break the law.
But any more
than I have a right when Judge Marbley orders me to count certain ballots that are cast incorrectly under Ohio law, I have the right to appeal that. I have the right to speak out against it. But we are a nation of laws, and we have to have that standard, and you have to follow the standard. And I have to enforce these laws the same way as if I would have had two Republican members
right.
to say, you know what? We're going to cut out all of this early voting. We're going to make it from 11 a.m. in the morning to 1 p.m. in the afternoon. Okay, I would handle it the exact same way because they have the right to disagree, but they don't have the right to violate the law.
But they had the right to vote on it. Why even have the right to vote on it if they vote? If the
they
vote
had
doesn't
previously established rules
mm-hmm.
in their board at their board meeting.
Yeah.
To set different hours, and because they set different hours, they had to correct that by making this vote.
Okay. They are suspended now. No other county board of elections did anything like this across the state of Ohio?
Not that I'm aware of.
And what's the process going forward now with the two suspended members from the Montgomery Board of Elections?
Yeah, there was a hearing, I believe it was on Monday, where they presented their case as to why they took the actions they did. There is a hearing officer who was conducting a review of the testimony that occurred there. Hearing officer will issue a report. I will read the report and then make a decision on any final action, whether they will be reinstated or relieved of their duties.
What are the options before the hearing officer?
The hearing officer is going to issue a report and a recommendation.
And
the hearing officer doesn't take action; it just reports. The hearing officer reports the findings It's part of the due process.
And do you have to embrace the finding or not? It's just a recommendation, right?
Just a recommendation.
Does it matter to you what the recommendation is, or have you already made up your mind?
Yeah, it does. There are a couple of different options that I'm considering that I won't go into. The bottom line is that once we decided that in Ohio, and you follow this, this started to become a national issue, okay, mm-hmm. about having counties playing by different rules. Now, understand, that's how it's always been, but for some reason, as it does when you're in a swing state like Ohio, it began to emerge as a disruptive and, frankly, unfair system in terms of access to voters. And so I had a choice, either leave these issues to local officials to continue to decide as they always have, or step in and create a uniform standard to be implemented across the state. That's what, frankly, Democrats were demanding that I did at the time. Literally on Monday, they were demanding that I create a uniform standard. On Wednesday, I created one. And on Friday, they were trying to play by a different set of rules by creating non-uniform standards in counties like Montgomery County. And I had to step in and say, look, this is serious. We're going to play by the same rules in Ohio, and local officials are not going to be allowed to play by their own rules.
Franklin County Republican Party Chairman Doug Price wrote to the Dispatch over the weekend that he didn't feel that the state should, and these are his words, contort the voting process to accommodate the urban, read African-American, voter turnout machine. Ohio Secretary of State John Husted, do you believe that the voting process in 2008 was a contortion?
I believe that we've improved upon it for 2012. I disagree with Mr. Price's comments. I believe that there is a history where African Americans were treated unequally under the American system of elections. We know the horrible stories from the South where you'd go register and people would ask you, you know, to pass the simple test of how many bubbles in a bar of soap. That kind of stuff is uncalled for, and we need to make sure that we are, look, Republicans will look out for certain groups of people, like, say, Amish voters. You know, Amish voters have certain religious beliefs and traditions. We have to keep all of those things in perspective when we're trying to create a fair system. And I disagree with Mr. Price's comments. I do believe, though, that we have a better system in 2012 than we had in 2008. And then we should. Let's face it, we learn from the mistakes of the past. 2004, there were problems. We got better in 2008. In 2008, there were problems. We're going to get better in 2012. We've already experienced some of the challenges of doing that. And we're going to have, for the first time ever, though, Ann, a uniform system whereby all voters will vote by the same rules.
Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Ohio Secretary of State John Husted coming up, one of those two Montgomery County elections officials who is now suspended from his post. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, West Nile virus numbers are spiking nationwide. Is global warming driving the outbreak? And is the U.S. in line for more tropical disease? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. 74 degrees with sunshine and a high of 82 for today. Clear skies tonight and comfortable a low of 56 degrees. Sunshine and a high of 85 on Thursday, and then sunshine and warmer on Friday with a high of 87. Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Ohio Secretary of State John Husted last week directed Ohio's 88 county boards of elections to establish uniform in-person early voting hours for the November election. Some say that in the process, he nixed the weekend hours before Election Day. He says he did not, that was already done by the Ohio General Assembly. Joining us now is Dennis Lieberman. He's one of two Montgomery County elections officials suspended from their posts last week for voting to go beyond the Secretary of State's directive and for adding those weekend in-person voting hours. Welcome to the show, Dennis Lieberman.
Thank you.
When you voted to extend the hours in Montgomery County beyond those in the directive, what was your understanding of how that action might be construed, of how it might be managed and the legality of it?
Well, honestly, when I went into that board meeting Friday morning, I took a look at the directive. I looked at the directive, and it referred to regular business hours Monday through Friday. It did not address anywhere in that directive what Montgomery County already had established, which were also weekend hours of, I think we had 3 weekend hours during the course of early voting elections. It didn't mention it. And so because it didn't mention it, I moved that we accept the directive and that we operate under the directive's hours for regular business hours, Monday through Friday, and that we simply keep what we had already done over the weekend. There was no direct language in that directive excluding me from doing that. Therefore, I believed and still believe that I was within the legal rights to do that.
Was there any discussion among board members at that time that this might create a problem?
There was a discussion among all the board members, but you know, I really want to bring a couple facts to the attention of the Secretary of State if he is listening to this. And if he reviews the record, I think he will find this to be absolutely true. The discussion among the board members was whether or not the directive included weekends. I read it as not including weekends. The Republican board member read it as including weekend. We have a legal advisor from the Montgomery County Prosecutor's Office. His reading of the directive was that it was ambiguous and that my motion was to follow the directive and simply to supplement it with what we had all previously done on December 28th of 2011 and also affirmed on August 6th of 2012 and also had used in the presidential primary of 2012, and that was weekend voting. So that is what I did. And after I did it, we then received a letter not from the Secretary of State, but from the Director of Elections saying that we had to meet again, which frankly I believe was in violation of the Sunshine Law anyway. But he says we had to meet again by 3 o'clock that day. We set a meeting at 2. I instructed our deputy director to make sure the media was advised so that, you know, we could at least try to mitigate what I believe to be a Sunshine Law violation. We met at 2 o'clock, and at 2 o'clock, I was advised that the letter stated that if we did not rescind the motion, that we faced termination. Since it was my motion, I refused to rescind it. The Republican member, then I moved for adjournment. The Republican, two Republicans, one of them seconded that motion for adjournment. Both of them voted to adjourn. Tom Ritchie, who is the chair, did not vote to adjourn. And that's how this all happened. That's why I don't believe that I have violated the directive. This is something that we normally do throughout the history of the Board of Elections. You resolve disputes by 2-2 ties. The Secretary of State then resolves it by voting one way or the other. Our choice then is, okay, it's now been resolved. We have to follow it because it's law, or we resign.
My guest is Dennis Lieberman. He's one of the two Montgomery County elections officials suspended from their post last week for voting to go beyond Secretary of State John Husted's directive. They voted to add those weekend in-person voting hours back to the schedule for Montgomery County. If you want to talk about that, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Dennis Lieberman, the directive in and of itself was not enough. You couldn't rest on the directive. You knew that you faced termination, and the directive in and of itself wasn't enough to convince you that nothing was going to change regardless of your vote.
Yes. I mean, what I looked at was a letter from a staff member of the board of the Secretary of State's office. Mm-hmm. That is not a directive. So just because Mr. Damschroeder believed that
who's his top elections official in the Secretary of State's office?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Just because he may have had, because he may have interpreted the directive one way, doesn't mean I am forced to interpret that directive that same way. Our prosecutor's office did not interpret it that way, and therefore I believed I was acting within the scope of the law by making the motion I made. And can I only add this?
Sure.
Even if it was a clear directive, making a motion and voicing your First Amendment right to dissent is not against the law. The only question would be if I enforce it after it's been clearly established that this is the law, if I refuse to enforce that law, or if I do something contrary to it, mm-hmm. that would be against the law. But filing a motion is simply a First Amendment right. It is not an action.
And it wound up a 2-2 tie, right?
It did,
so yes. The next step in your mind was that he would just break the tie.
Yes, yes. But also, may I add that there's a directive that addresses that. And the directive is that after there's a tie, we have 14 days in which both sides can write a brief to the Secretary of State and give our opinions as to why he should vote in our favor.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have that. He ended up breaking the tie several hours after that 2 o'clock meeting without any input from me. I have yet to have input other than through the motion and the hearing I had on Monday as to why I did what I did.
John Husted earlier in the program talked about the Ohio General Assembly's role, or I should say lack thereof, and it's not acting on or resolving this issue at the state level beforehand when they passed the law regarding military personnel voting hours, and when they passed another law clarifying that those hours and that those weekend hours before the election day were only for military personnel. Nobody else could do it. Were these things that you weighed in on at the time when the General Assembly was addressing these issues this way?
No. Nobody asked us about it.
Mm-hmm.
We did not weigh in, and frankly, given the makeup of the General Assembly, it probably would have been a futile act. But I can tell you that our weekend voting, what we had in Montgomery County,
yeah,
cognizant of that law, did not include the weekend beforehand.
In this past year?
Yeah, for yeah. 2012. Yeah.
Right.
Now, in 2008, we did have it. And we had, of our early voting in 2008, we had over a third of that early voting occur on that weekend before the election. I think that's a terrible law by our Ohio legislature. I think that it is discriminatory in its actions.
So you agree that John Husted didn't make this up. He didn't nix the weekend hours. Those were already nixed.
No, that's not completely accurate.
Okay.
The only thing that was nixed was the weekend before the election.
Okay.
There are other weekends.
I stand corrected. Correct.
That were
right.
Not nixed. Yes.
Right.
And that was nixed by Mr. Husted.
And going back to your comment about the makeup of the Ohio General Assembly, it being completely controlled by Republicans.
Yes.
And you're a Democrat.
I am, but I don't see this as a Republican-Democrat issue. I see this as access to voting issue. I see this as, in particular, as it relates to our African-American community, and there are studies which have shown that the African-American community uses the weekend voting more so than any other community. So if that is accurate, which it is, because we've done it. We did it in 2008. We've done it in 2010. We did it again in 2012 for the presidential. So we know it works. And in fact, we in Montgomery County have saved $200,000 a year by having the early voting. We eliminated precincts. We eliminated polling places.
Because you could condense them.
Yes, because we had, for early voting, 27% of our votes in 2008 were early voting.
I have an email from Sue. She says, in 2004, did Montgomery County have long lines at some polling places like we did in Franklin County? I waited in line for 2 hours to vote in 2004. I saw many people get in line and then leave because they did not have time to wait. In 2008, I voted on a Saturday and was very happy with that option. I like voting in person. I think the absentee ballot feels un-American. Dennis Lieberman?
We did. We had extremely long lines in 2004. I personally witnessed some of them. I went out to polling places where the lines were outside the door and down the block. We had horror stories of people waiting for 6 hours to vote, and they couldn't do that. And that was what began the entire process of, okay, we have to figure out a better way to service particularly urban voters because their lifestyle is different than our rural voters. What they do and how they do it, how they vote, is different.
So you don't necessarily support uniformity then?
I do not necessarily support uniformity for the sake of uniformity.
Okay.
Jim Crow laws in the southern states were uniform in many of those states. That didn't mean they're right. In Montgomery County and in the state of Ohio, I applaud the effort for trying to make a level playing field, if indeed that's what's being done. I don't believe that's what is being done. Secretary of State Husted had many opportunities to break ties, particularly in Cuyahoga County, where weekend voting was being offered. And he broke the tie with the Republicans saying no weekend voting. He could have done it the opposite way. We could have had weekend voting across the state for everybody. And had he done that, that'd be great.
But the point's been made that in smaller, less populous rural counties, the burden, they don't have the economies of scale to manage a burden like that.
As I stated, we actually save $200,000 a year in being able to close a number of polling places and reduce a number of our precincts so that because of the fact that 27% of our people participate in early voting. Some of these smaller counties I know have smaller budgets. They also have smaller populations to service. Therefore, their expenses are not going to be as large as ours are.
But and they have a square mile issue, though, that's pretty equivalent.
Their square miles, though, is irrelevant because what we're talking about is opening up the Board of Elections headquarters at one location. And at that location, that's where the expense is. It's not going to be throughout the square miles of a county. And I can only say that the president of the Board of Elections Association, I believe, made the statement that it may be difficult, but they'll find a way to do it.
So going forward, you await now the hearing officer's recommendation, which then the Ohio Secretary of State John Husted takes as a recommendation and makes his decision from that. What do you make of all of this going forward at this point, Dennis Lieberman?
Well, I have the dubious distinction of being one of the first people to ever be fired from the Board of Elections in the history of the state of Ohio.
Right.
I'm not happy about that. I don't think it's right. All I did was express what I think is a First Amendment right to freedom of speech, to express what I thought was a flaw in the directive, and to keep what we had already voted on. That's all I did. If I'm going to be punished for that, then that sends a chilling effect across the state of Ohio to every board member that you should no longer use your brain, but you should simply do whatever you're told. In which case, why do we exist?
Dennis Lieberman, suspended Montgomery County Board of Elections member. Thanks for joining us, Dennis Lieberman.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. When we return, we're going to talk to a national expert on voting procedures across the country. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Bill Hader is nominated for an Emmy for his work on Saturday Night Live. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with him about his characters, including Stefan, the gay nightlife correspondent. Hader's co-writer often adds lines in his cue cards at the last minute just to make him laugh on air.
When I walk into work, the cue card guys are like, hey, we just read the Stefan. Oh, boy. You know what I mean?
Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in just about 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Much of the water from the river that flows into the Kalahari Desert simply evaporates in the harsh climate. Yet the river, the delta, and its floodplain support one of the most unusual ecosystems in the world, transforming a hostile environment into a Garden of Eden. Watch Nature presenting Kalahari, the Flooded Desert. It's tonight at 8 on WOSU-TV. 74 degrees with sunshine, warming up to a high of 82 today. Clear skies for tonight, a low of 56. Sunshine on Thursday and a high of 85 degrees. More sunshine on Friday and getting a little warmer, a high of 87. Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's College of Arts and Sciences, which announces the exhibition B.B. Miller, Tracing History, on view at the Urban Arts Space, August 23rd through September 29th. Opening reception is August 23rd from 6 to 8 p.m. More information is available at uas.osu.edu. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Ohio Secretary of State John Husted last week directed Ohio's 88 county boards of elections to establish uniform in-person early voting hours. One of the results of that has been a vote in Montgomery County. Two people voted to expand that directive or expand those hours to include the 3 days before Election Day as early voting days. And those two Democrats that voted for that have since been suspended. We still await the decision by a hearing officer. And then the eventual decision by Secretary of State Husted on what to do with them and whether or not they'll be the first Board of Election members to be fired from their posts. Joining us now to talk about how Ohio stacks up in the early voting hours issue is Michael McDonald. He's a political scientist at George Mason University in Virginia. His research interests include voting behavior and American political development, and it's the basis for the United States Elections Project. He is widely published in scholarly journals and has worked as a redistricting consultant or expert witness in 11 states. Welcome to the show, Michael McDonald.
Oh, great to be with you. And actually, that list includes Ohio with the state legislative redistricting. Yeah,
that's right. Always fun in Ohio, right?
Yes. It's not one thing, it's another.
I guess, you know, just right off the top of my head, I'm thinking, is it states like Ohio that tend to get the most attention because we're the swing states and we're the big deal, the big feather in the cap?
Yeah, absolutely. So we don't hear much about, say, Oregon, which holds their elections entirely by mail. Not much controversy about that, but in a state like Ohio, where not only is it a battleground state, but we have a real hybrid system of voting within the state, opens up the possibility that you could manipulate, or at least attempt to manipulate, the outcome by fiddling around with the election laws.
We've talked about in Ohio before, you know, the idea of the all mail-in vote as they have in Oregon. But, you know, this discussion over uniformity raises the question of whether or not Ohio is a state where that would work. Ohio is a much different state than Oregon.
Well, what's interesting is that in 2010, we had the urban jurisdictions within Ohio mail out absentee ballot request forms to all of the registered voters in their jurisdictions. And you saw a significant increase in mail balloting compared to 2008 within these urban jurisdictions. And I'll applaud Houston for the directive that the state of Ohio is going to send out these absentee ballot request forms to all registered voters. I think that's a very good step forward in terms of uniformity, offers the same opportunity to all of the voters within the state. And what's interesting about that, when you compare that to Oregon, say, or any of these other states that have that run their elections predominantly by mail now, we're talking about like a Colorado, Oregon, and Washington, what's interesting is once you start offering this option to people to vote by mail, more and more people do it. And Washington, when they first started offering what's called permanent absentee ballot status, which is somewhat, you know, you're inching up towards that in Ohio.
Yeah.
What they saw is more and more people opted for that as the option of voting for them. And eventually the state of Washington, the local jurisdictions there said, We have nobody showing up on election day to our polling location, so we're just going to shut those down. We'll have one open at our Central Election Administration office just to catch anybody who needs to vote in person, but otherwise we'll handle it all by mail. And so once you open up this door, I think particularly to mail balloting, you start seeing a much greater frequency of its use. And as an example of where we're going with this, in 2008, 25.2% of all the votes were cast prior to Election Day in Ohio. The Romney campaign is forecasting that 45% of the votes in Ohio this time around will be cast prior to Election Day. So you can already see this dramatic increase in Ohio that's related to, I believe, the Romney campaign is going to be aggressively mobilizing early voting, so that will be different than what McCain did in 2008. But also this greater option of allowing absentee balloting for all the registered voters in Ohio.
The point's been made that different parts of the state vote differently, not only in terms of who they vote for, but how they vote. So how they vote, when and where. That extra couple days, that extra Saturday and Sunday of voting in 2008 could have been the difference for Barack Obama.
Absolutely. A close election outcome, and Obama was, his campaign had a very aggressive early voting mobilization strategy in place. It also, as we were listening to in the last discussion, it relieved some pressure on election day, so the lines were a little bit shorter on election day, which then allows other people to vote as well. So making voting more convenient, especially if a campaign is going to push for it through mobilization, could increase the numbers of early voting. And we can actually see this in some other states, like in North Carolina, I should say. The Obama campaign would host events during the early voting period within North Carolina. And when they had those campaign rallies within those counties, you could see the number of early voters pop up on that one campaign day. And, you know, that's 2008 with Obama. In 2010 in Nevada, Sarah Palin held rallies in Nevada, the opening day of early voting in Nevada, and you could see a spike up in Republicans voting early there. So if the campaigns engage in this activity, certainly they can increase the number of people voting early. What we don't really know, though, is the sort of the overall calculation here, because would those people have voted anyway on election day? And then if they had voted early on election day anyway, what's the other effects of having longer lines on those days? And would that dissuade other people to vote? So it's difficult to say directly. We can observe directly, I should say, that some, you know, these campaign activities where more people are voting early. What's difficult to say is just the overall increase in turnout that might be associated with these activities, because you have substitution effects and other things that are going on as well.
My guest is Michael McDonald. He's a political scientist at George Mason University. We're talking about voting processes, whether absentee voting, how it works, whether it works, and what the ultimate goal is. And I guess, Michael McDonald, the question is, someone asked us earlier, we didn't get to their call, but they said, is the goal to increase voting? Should that be the goal?
Well, I come from the position, this is just my personal belief, that the answer is yes, and I work hard to increase voting for everybody. In fact, some of these studies that are out there suggest that, say, the mail balloting actually benefits Republicans. So there's this misperception, I think, that because of what happened in 2008, we had a lot of excitement for Obama. We had a campaign that was aggressively courting the early vote. We had, in contrast, the McCain campaign, which was starved for cash compared to the Obama campaign. They just didn't have the same resources to do the mobilization that the Obama campaign was engaged in. So what do we see in 2008? We saw more early voters cast votes for Obama than for McCain. But that was the first time that's happened, that the early vote broke towards the Democratic Party. And in 2010, it reverted right back around, where more Republicans, who were very enthusiastic, were voting for their candidates, and they were doing it at the first opportunity they could do it by voting early. So this election cycle, we know that the Romney campaign has all the resources in the world to devote to voter mobilization, and they're making early voting a part of their campaign. They've already done that in states like Ohio and Florida and others during the primary season. So they're going to do it. Obama's going to do it. We're probably not going to repeat 2008. So it's, in my mind, it's a bad policy judgment to base your decisions on 2008 and who you think is going to win or lose that vote based on what happened in a very unusual election in 2008. I would say, you know, let's just what's really going on here is it's about convenience for the voters. If they want to vote, if they're enthusiastic, they're going to vote early, and it's going to make it more convenient for other people on election day by, you know, shifting around when people are going to be voting for them to, you know, also vote as well. So it has spillover effects for other people in terms of convenience. And again, if you look at the states where we see early voting, once it gets adopted, more and more people do it. So clearly, this is more of a convenience factor for voters, and then you leave it up to the campaigns to mobilize their supporters.
Brian in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Oh, thanks, Ann. Hey, it's really great that you have this guest, because I think we need to really have a lot of people talking about the voting works, because I think this has gotten to be very polarized as far as being trying to your last guest, Mr. Lieberman, used words like Jim Crow to laws to describe the Mr. Husted's decision to have uniformity, and it just seems to me like having uniformity is, even though it's not perfect, it seems fair. It doesn't seem reasonable that the people who live in Cuyahoga County should have more say and more access than someone who, say, lives in Crooksville, Ohio, or someplace like that, where somebody might have to drive, you know, 20 miles to a polling place, as opposed to being able to go to their local elementary school or wherever they get to vote. It just seems like a reasonable thing. And I think that, you know, with the voter purges and things like that, on NPR, they reported there was 2,700 people in Florida that they checked, and 80% of them actually were legitimately not citizens. And so but the news story was that they were mostly Hispanic. And not that the you know, people being incredulous about the fact that there were people voting that weren't really supposed to be voting. And I don't think it's really healthy for the democracy. And I'm not a Romney supporter. I'm not a Republican. So I just wanted to give my perspective there. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, I agree that uniformity is important. But we do have to recognize that different jurisdictions have different ways of conducting their elections. So that's also kind of important that these local jurisdictions, especially in the rural areas, are more stressed in terms of their resources than the large urban areas, which are very professionalized organizations that have lots of staff and space to do their business. You look at a local level in rural areas, you'll see that the person who's responsible for conducting elections is often a clerk or somebody who has multiple responsibilities within that local jurisdiction, and elections is just another one of the things that they do. So you're talking about a part-time employee compared with, you know, someone who's a full-time professional employee who that's all they do in one of these urban jurisdictions. And this is actually one of the things that I if you really look deeply at the way in which we run our elections, there is disparities between our rural areas and our urban areas. And it's really unfortunate that we politicize the idea that increasing voting somehow helps Democrats and decreasing it perhaps through voter ID laws and other things somehow helps Republicans, when more votes are being lost through election administration problems and trying to improve the performance of elections, especially in rural areas, I think would benefit those voters quite a bit, and probably would help Republicans, I think, on balance, but who knows? But because we get so wrapped up in this idea that somehow making elections run more efficiently and improving the experience for voters helps Democrats, we can't even have this discussion about how we can improve the experience for all the voters within a state.
We have an email from a listener. They say there is the cultural issue of voting with one's feet, as well as the difficulty with mail for many lower economic households. Again, foreclosed and moving, insecure mailboxes, etc. Weekends work for workers and students.
Right. So having the extra option of voting in person on Election Day can help alleviate that, or in person early can help alleviate that particular problem. And what I also like about voting in person early, and maybe you don't need to have, you know, it in every polling place, you know, or have it widely administered, but, you know, giving that option to some voters is that if you do show up to vote and there's some sort of problem with your registration or something else, you can figure that out before Election Day, and you can work with the election officials to sort this all out. In Ohio and other states, if you show up on Election Day and that problem occurs, then you're casting a provisional ballot, and you've got certain timelines and other things that start kicking in about how to resolve those problems. And so your vote, I think, is less likely to be counted, unless, as opposed to someone who votes early, where you have a time to figure out all of the issues that are involved with the problem with your registration. So I certainly think you need to have that as an option. The question, though, and this is I think this is a legitimate concern for the especially the local jurisdictions in rural areas. They would have to keep their offices open during that entire early voting period to accommodate the early voter. And remember, these are people who have part-time jobs. They're doing other things typically. And I don't know exactly if that's true in Ohio, but it's true in many other places in the country. You have to hire extra staff. You have to have the room available. You have to have the election equipment available. There are costs that are involved there. And so having that option available for everybody in the state of Ohio, I think, it's reasonable to have it, but just it's difficult to implement if you really think about it.
Michael McDonald, thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Michael McDonald is a political scientist at George Mason University. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.